to start off part 5 of this series, I am pleased to once again bring you another interview episode, this time with Ivan E. Schwartz, who was a co-producer on Band of Brothers. So, enjoy. So I'm here talking with Ivan E. Schwartz, who is a co-producer on Band of Brothers. Thank you very much for agreeing to talk to me.
Oh, my pleasure.
Yeah, so why don't we start from the beginning? How did you get connected to Band of Brothers? What was the impetus that got you there? I mean, again, if you want, you can go further back and talk about your history in the business and how that helped you to get there also. Whatever's good for you.
Well, I did come from show business, so that helped. What happened was I was asked to do some preliminary scouting. I honestly did not think I would be working on this show. I knew that it was going to shoot in Europe, and they weren't going to hire very many Americans to work on the show at the time. And I was originally, they thought they were going to do the first 2 hours in the United States, so the training to COA until they jumped on D-Day. But mm-hmm. those first two hours were going to be filmed in the United States. So I spent quite a bit of time looking for where that might be. And then I went to Europe to see where we might want to film the entire series. We scouted many different countries, including Ireland and the Czech Republic, Germany, and we ended up in, obviously, in England, and it turned out to be an amazing experience, and it was the absolutely right place. The crew and the people that we ended up working with have all become family. And I think it shows on screen the yep. dedication that people had was pretty incredible.
Right. Okay. So, I mean, I understand that you have a background in being in location management, right? So basically how does the process work? You know, like, Steven Spielberg or Tom Hanks says to someone, all right, go get me a location manager who can find us a place to do, to shoot the first 2 episodes, and somehow it trickles down to you? Or did you know, were you connected to someone, I guess, higher up who said, hey, Ivan E. Schwartz is the guy you want to use for this because he's the best location manager around? I mean, I don't know.
I don't know what that discussion was. I do know that Tony Toe, who was mm-hmm. An executive producer on the show, he and I had worked a lot together. And when he approached me about doing this show, I was more than happy to participate in any way I could. Like I said earlier, I was not thinking that I was going to end up in Europe, but it turned out that I ended up living there for quite a few years. Turns out I met my wife there and while working on Band.
Oh, wow.
And it turned out to be one of the most amazing experiences. Truly one of the most amazing experiences in my life. But originally I was tapped to look for possibilities in the US, and then they eventually decided that they were going to shoot the entire show and recreate the Toccoa, Georgia in the UK.
And that was probably a decision that was based on financial reasons, that just was easier if everyone's already in one location.
It was based on financial reasons, and it was based on, what they could actually accomplish. The UK had a really great incentive program. I mean, I don't know how much people know about, like, where projects decide to shoot.
Okay, so you feel free to explain that.
I'm
interested in
countries or cities or states, whether if they shoot in America that are based on incentives, what the percentage of the incentive and how it impacts the production financially. And so Band was one of the first big projects to utilize that back in early 2000. And it was great. I mean, I could not. It was the absolute right place to film the show, and it turned out to be an amazing experience, I think, for everyone that participated on it.
Oh
The
wow.
fact that we're still talking about it 25 years later is still amazing.
Correct. I completely agree with you. I mean, that's obviously one of the reasons why I'm doing this podcast is because, the show has such a large impact on so many different people, again, even after so many years. I mean, unfortunately, none of the veterans are still around, but their children and grandchildren are still around to talk about it. And now you have all the people that were involved in the production itself that have somehow become more engaged with the whole story and are still engaged over 25, even though 25 years has passed. So that's just really, really, yeah.
I was very fortunate in that I got to spend a tremendous amount of time with the real men, the men who actually participated in the war, and became very close to several. And it was I don't want to, this is going to sound cliche, but it was truly a life-altering experience. The gratitude that I have for not only their service, but the service of all people who put themselves in harm's way to protect our freedoms. I mean, I think it's something that's interesting is that we don't think about what the cost of freedom is.
Right.
And so many people have paid that cost. And I think it's really important. And I think Band did a good job, but I think there are a lot of other shows that do a good job. But I think it's very important to remember that. And I feel like Band helps us remember that.
Yeah, I definitely agree. I think that's 100% true. Which of the veterans were on site during the whole production? I mean, was it Garnier and Babe mostly, or were there others that were also there?
No, we did have Bill and Babe, who were awesome, who could not have been, they were just a true pleasure to have on set. And Winters came out to visit as well, Dick Winters.
Oh, wow. You probably had a lot of interesting conversations with these three guys.
Yeah, I mean, when I first started on Band, the first person I met, it was sort of a test, was Dick Winters. And so I knew Dick pretty much until he passed, and I'd stayed in touch with him. He was a very interesting and remarkable man who accomplished remarkable things in a very, very difficult situation. And I think the thing that resonated with me the most was that his men, the men that survived and the people that I knew, would have followed him into battle well into their 90s.
Wow. Again, that's one of the, I wouldn't say unique things about Easy Company, but that's one of the very special things about Easy Company is the fact that, these men formed such a bond. I'm not saying that other units that fought in any war, whether it was World War II or Vietnam or World War I or, anything you can go back in history, that there was no, obviously there was a bond between the men, but it's just so easy to see the bond between the men of Easy. And I think that's one of the reasons why it was decided that this is the unit that they need to focus the story on.
Well, it was unique in that, right after the war, they started to hold reunions. Bill Garnier kind of ran that for a very, very long time. And it, to some extent, held the unit together, the surviving members, and, allowed the families to participate. That certainly happened later once the book came out and the series came out, where When we did the premiere in Utah Beach on D-Day, we had invited family members as well as the well, there were 52 surviving members of Easy Company at that time out to the premiere. And the thing that I think resonated with me from the family members was I had no idea that my father, participated in this. I had no idea that my grandfather participated in this. If it wasn't for Band of Brothers, he brought out his uniform and showed us some of the artifacts he came back with. I heard that story over and over and over again. So it was really nice to see the veterans of World War II getting their due, and introducing them to their families,
Right.
who they lived with most all their entire lives, and I had no idea that they even participated in the war, really. Curwood Lipton said something to me once that, kind of explains it a little bit. But he's like, that was 4 years of my life. And I went on to have a really amazing career, and I met other people in my life and, that participated in my life for the next 50 years. And you just don't think about that. You think that the 4 years is what kind of defines you. And for some people, it did. But for many of the guys, they came back to careers and family, and they went on with their lives without really, processing what they had seen or what they experienced, and for understandable reasons. But it was nice that we were able to help celebrate them.
Yeah.
And I feel like several of the men, Band of Brothers, extended their lives. It gave them purpose, because they were recognized. They were treated like heroes by people who didn't, even in their neighborhoods, who didn't know that they even served. And so it's a unique gift, not just to the people that got to work on it, but it was a neat, a very unique gift for the people that participated in it, in the war, and we were able to celebrate them, years later.
Yeah, that's 100% true. I mean, everyone else will hear the interview that I had with Chris Langlois, who's the grandson of Doc Rowe, in a little over a month from now. But one of the things that he told me was is that he never knew that his grandfather even fought in the war or anything like that until after his grandfather had already, passed on. And then he saw the book, saw his, he mentions that he saw the name Doc Rowe like three times in the book and said, oh, he didn't do anything. And then eventually, as all the stories start coming out, and after he started talking to other veterans from Easy Company, he learned so much more about his grandfather. And he has he said this is the biggest regret of his life, that he never knew that he could have talked to his grandfather about all these things. I mean, obviously there was a reason why he didn't discuss this. And it's something that I've talked about both when I did my season of Saving Private Ryan, and now the whole fact that a lot of these men just held it in. They didn't talk about their war experiences with their families, and once a year when they went to the reunions, that then they had an outlet of where they can talk to people who actually understood what they went through. And I mean, I'll never forget the story that George Lutz Jr. told me, that there was one time where this probably happened more than once, but where one of the guys brought another veteran, to the reunion, someone who wasn't part of Easy Company, but someone who just needed an outlet of people to talk to that understood what he had gone through. And as you said, that's one of the unique things about these men, that they kept their connection together for decades, in order to have a place, I guess you could sort of say a safe space, for them to talk about their war experiences and the people that they spent you know, these harsh 4 years with. But as you said, they went on to have, you know, very productive lives with families and regular jobs and things like that. And, you know, every so often they just needed, I guess, to have that little break to go back and talk about the things that they went through.
I think that's even true today.
Oh, of course.
You know, people who experience, you know, people who experience battle or experience the military, it's a small club. And, you know, having not served, you know, I don't even pretend to relate to their experiences.
Right. I mean, and I fit in halfway there because I've served, but I've never been in real battle. So, you know, I can understand parts of it, but, you know, not the battle aspects of it.
Well, I think the battle aspects add another perspective, but I think serving is, you know, it all matters and it all counts. And I do think that being able to share those experiences with another human being, whether they were in your company, you know, it doesn't matter. And it all, I think it helps people heal, and I helps, you know, hopefully it helps people unite and brings people, kind of reminds us of why they fought, right? You know, you know, keeps our world in perspective, I think.
Yeah, I completely agree with you. Okay, now excuse me for the blunt question, but I need to ask it this way. So you've described to us that you were working there as a location manager, trying to find the places to do it, and then, I mean, I know that you're credited in Band of Brothers as a co-producer. So first of all, again, forgive the bluntness. What does a co-producer do, and how did you get into that position?
Well, I was, you know, incredibly lucky. had an opportunity to, you know, I had an opportunity to, you know, they ended up, you know, I was not from the UK, so I had an opportunity to do other things. I spent a lot of time working out certain deals, working with the veterans, working with the UK government, and I ended up doing something completely different. And, you know, it led to that particular title. I think a producer on different shows do different things. You have some people who are, you know, for television, executive producers are very creative. And usually the writers and creators of the shows or creator of the episodes. And then the producer is the, you know, the producers are the people that make things happen.
Okay.
Literally make things happen. So they, you know, deal with all the logistics and make sure that everybody has what they need in order to accomplish their job. And, you know, one of the things I was, and I consider myself incredibly lucky, is I was at the right place at the right time. And I was able to do some things that allowed me to, you know, I'm a out of the box kind of guy. And I think that allowed me to, and I don't think anything's impossible. So it allowed me to get things done for the production that I don't think probably would have gotten done in a traditional tract.
Okay. All right. That's great. Now, is there a difference with either as a location manager or as a co-producer when you're in a different country? I mean, do things work? Obviously, things theoretically work differently in different countries. So, you know, you would imagine that, you know, you would, if you have someone dealing with things because they're an expert in America, you know, finding locations or doing all these things out of the box, but it wouldn't necessarily translate 100% if they're in a country where they're less familiar with the way that the system works.
Absolutely. But the one thing that I have always done, and it's important to understand the culture and the environment in which you're entering into. And I did not assume, because we were shooting in the UK or scouting other countries, that we were going to have the same experience that we would have in Los Angeles. I mean, shooting in Los Angeles is different than shooting in New York or Florida or another state.
Or Cleveland.
And it's no different. Or Cleveland. And it's no different in for whether you leave the country. So once you understand the culture, and, you know, I knew what we needed to accomplish. And then you just ask a very simple question. Here's what I need to accomplish. Here's what this production needs to accomplish. How can you, whoever that is in that particular country or state, how do I work with you to accomplish this? And let's do it together. And you tell me, I'm not going to make an assumption that I know how it works in your country. But I know what I need to get done. So how do we do it within your guidelines, within your culture? Like, how do we do that? And what do I need to do to make that happen? And I never assumed that I knew better.
Do they attach someone, a local, to you to help you maneuver through all these different things?
Yeah. I mean, there were a few people that were key to I think, to our success. You know, this is not a industry where you can do it alone. And I think it's really important that when you watch the credits of a TV show or a movie, that everybody has a very important job. And without those people and without recognizing the importance of their job, there's nobody more important than anyone else.
Correct.
I'm a big, big believer in that. You know, I mean, I appreciate that the focus goes to the director, the writer, the actors and everything. But at the end of the day, it's a collaborative medium, and you need everyone to participate.
Right. It reminds me. I know that you're also connected to From the Earth to the Moon. So it reminds me of when they were talking about I believe it was Roger Chaffee in the second episode, where they said that he would go places and he'd start talking to the janitors, because he said that, you know, everyone is doing mm-hmm. something there. You have to realize how important everyone is in the system. If you're even someone who is doing something that you think is a menial job, it's needed in order for everything to eventually work smoothly and perfectly.
I think astronauts had a unique take on that, because you know, the smallest thing could affect someone's life, right?
Yeah, right. Yeah.
And, you know, but that's a good example. I mean, when we were shooting, originally we were going to shoot that show in Los Angeles. And I had gone to Florida, and I'm like, there's no way you can shoot this in Los Angeles. We have to shoot this in Florida. And, you know, if you want it to be real, I mean, the one thing that Tom and Tony and, you know, at least on From the Earth to the Moon, and Tom, Tony, and Steven on Band of Brothers, they wanted it to be as right as it could be,
mm-hmm.
right? They wanted to make sure. I mean, that was the beauty of both those shows, is that getting it right was so important to them. Yes, it's a TV show, but getting it right and allowing the audience to experience it in such a way, like when we did, I mean, I know this is off the track, but when we did the...
No such thing as being off the track. It's fine.
The creativity that went to building the moon and facilitating that was amazing. It was amazing to watch.
You didn't film it on the moon?
Nope, but it sure looked like it. And they did a great job, you know, because, like, for the, you know, they created a light source that was a single light source, like the sun.
Mm-hmm.
So there was always one light source, and the way they created it was pretty amazing. And I think that on Band of Brothers, people knew the extent that we went to get it right. I think it would blow them away. I mean, whether it was the uniforms or, putting rebar in some of the fake weapons that some of the extras had in order to give it weight so they don't flop around. So it looked like when they were running into battle that they actually had a weapon in their hand as opposed to it appearing to be too light. The thing that people did, whether it's the Corcoran boots they wore in the show, were made by Corcoran and they were the original boots. There was no rubber soles or foam padding in the boot. They had to wear them in, and they did. When they went through their boot camp, which was another amazing experience, they had to wear their boots in. And what was really, I think, the coolest thing for me was most of the crew was British, but they were so invested in telling the story correctly that everybody was on the same team. Everybody was moving in the same direction, and everybody wanted the same result, which was telling the story as truthfully and as accurately as we could, right? It wasn't a documentary, so it wasn't going to be, we're not recreating anything. But the events that happened were as accurate as you could be in a 10-hour miniseries covering 2 years of people's lives.
That's just amazing. You're working on the project, and you've created strong bonds with a lot of the people there. Now, it's a known fact that in the 25 years since, many of the cast and crew are still in contact with one another, which I guess is somewhat unusual for this type of project. What's your take on that? Like, why do you think that this unique thing happened with this production?
I think two reasons. One is when you have the real guys still alive, everybody's invested in getting it right by them, doing it right by them. And so whether it would be whether it be the crew or the cast, and even the producers, myself and some of the Tom and Steven and Tony and Eric Bork and some of the people that were involved from the very beginning wanted to make sure we got it right by the guys. And I don't think you don't usually get the real people to question and get questions answered and get their experience. And when they come to visit on set, you feel this responsibility. And I feel like they took it super seriously, when they went through boot camp and they were gone for quite a few days, and Dale Dye did not hold back. I'm not saying that they were in basic training, but they were, when you get a bunch of actors and they are sleep deprived and having to do a lot of the maneuvers in order to get it right? You wanted to almost like muscle train them to get it right when they're on set. And it paid off. When a replacement came in, so if it's one of the actors that didn't go through boot camp with them, they were treated like that. They were treated like a replacement. Just by the nature of we've gone through this already, and now you're coming in here fresh. So don't think you know anything. That has, there is nothing better than going to a reunion or, I would say there's barely a month goes by where I haven't talked to somebody, one of the actors on band or something. Because I think everyone Pretty, I mean, I can't speak for everyone, but I would be very surprised that everyone, when the phone rings and it's somebody who worked on band, that they would not pick it up. And I don't care from the top all the way to the bottom. There was something about that show that I've never experienced before. Usually, when you work on a show, you're kind of happy when it's over. You know, let's move on. I'm kind of sick of these people. That's just not the case. Just not the case. 25 years later, everybody is still super happy to see one another, and it's really wonderful to see the actors interact with one another even to this day. And everybody's super happy. You know, some of them, a lot of them, have gone on to have like amazing careers. And you know, some of the people that weren't, you know, the stars of the show still, I think, feel an affinity for the show as well, even though they weren't the center of the story. But everybody was treated kind of the same. Didn't matter. Everybody knew what everybody's role was, and everyone was treated really well. And it comes from the top. It really came from Tom and Steven and Tony, you know, supporting the creative process and understanding what it was going to need to put, what it was going to take to pull this off.
Right. I completely agree, and I think they managed to do that.
They absolutely did. They
So
absolutely did.
you're saying the all the guys who play the Apollo astronauts don't get together, from the Earth to the Moon. They don't get together on a yearly basis either.
It was different. You know, we had Dave Scott as a consultant on the show, and it made a huge difference, right? You know, I remember sitting there one day, and I was like standing outside my office in Orlando, and Dave comes up to me and goes, "Ivan, what are you staring at?" And I go, "Well, I'm kind of just looking at the moon." And I go, "Let me just get this straight through my head. I just want to get this right. You flew to the moon. You landed on the moon, you drove on the moon, you walked on the moon, and now you're standing next to me. I'm having a hard time reconciling this." You know, it's those are like the moments where you like, you know, you just appreciate where you are and how lucky you are.
Wow. See, I'm always jealous of all of you guys that had the opportunity to meet and speak with both the astronauts and the men of Easy Company. They're both from the Earth to the Moon and Band of Brothers are probably my favorite miniseries that have ever been made. And I know both of them so much inside and out. And the fact that I can talk to someone like you who has spoken and spent time with some of the real men is just my one step closer to that, even though I know I'll never have the opportunity to speak to those men because unfortunately they're not around anymore. But just to
I
hear
want
them
to make
say
it
their
clear.
opinions.
I do not take that for granted. I feel incredibly fortunate that I was
Oh,
at the
I'm
right
sure.
place at the right time.
I'm 100% sure
You
of that.
know, when we did first from the Earth to the Moon, I was like, "Oh my God, you know, I'm never going to have an experience like this again." You know, shooting at the Kennedy Space Center, you know, watching shuttle launches, you know, from the top of the VAB building. I mean, having like amazing experiences. Like if you watch a shuttle launch from the top of the VA, they only allow like 10 people up there at a time.
Oh, wow.
And being able to have done that like three or four times, you know, was spectacular, right? I mean, I knew at the moment that I'm like incredibly lucky to have been there and experienced what I experienced. But, you know, having said that, you know, we all find our, you know, doesn't make me, I'm lucky. Those are, you know, I feel like in life, you just don't take anything for granted. And, you know, you have to appreciate those moments and recognize those moments. And I'm a big believer in recognizing your moments in life. And those were two of the coolest moments that I've had.
It definitely sounds like it. Wow. That's amazing. So
at least professional.
Yeah. Okay. Obviously. Is there anything else you want to add? Something else that you think people would be interested in hearing about your experiences with Band of Brothers?
No, I think I kind of covered it. It okay, shows yeah. you the camaraderie and the you know what it what you know the affection that everybody still has for one another, and we're lucky. You know, I'm lucky that I got to participate in both these projects.
All right. Thank you very much for taking the time to talk to me, Ivan. This has been really, really eye-opening and a great experience for me, too. So thank you very much for joining me.
Well, thank you for reaching out. I appreciate it.
All right.